just a little bit.
All right, I want to just put this on it first. This conversation between Dutch Leonard and Walter Langford is being recorded in Dutch's home in Auburn, Illinois on July 17th, 1982. We'll see how much time we need. So tell me, Dutch, you were born right here in Auburn, Illinois.
That's right.
And it interests me that so many of you fellows that I'm talking to have gone back to the very town you were born in. Travis Jackson, and JoJo Moore, and Dinky Whitney, and really Joe Sewell and Rig Stevenson are within 10, 15 miles of where they were born.
Cecil Travis, I think.
Yeah, I didn't talk with Cecil, but so many of you are back in the same place you were born.
Well, I was born and raised here. This is home.
Yeah. Well, that's nice. And you started playing ball here up there.
That's right. Summer pro.
Uh-huh. And how did that lead into something bigger?
Well, I went down to coal mine with my dad, and boy, I didn't like that. I didn't like it down there, and he said, well, you see, I've tried to feed you kids and clothe you kids all these years, and I worked hard. I know he worked hard.
Yeah.
So I got out of high school. I left home, man, and went to Chicago and got a job digging ditches for Public Service Company of Illinois. And they were going to have a baseball team, and I asked them if I could come out and pitch batting practice. So after I pitched batting practice a couple times, they said, well, how about you pitching for the team? Well, that suited me fine.
Even better.
And then that year, we played for the championship of Chicago semi-pro, and I beat old Hippo Vaughn, who used
to
be
really?
The cut. I beat him 1-0. And after the game, a guy by the name of Jerry Standard who caught me, he told me, my brother is playing in the Southern League, and I'm sure if you want to play pro ball, I think he can get the job. I said, I sure like to take a shot at it.
You know it.
And that's how I started in the pro ball, with Mobile, Alabama.
Mobile. Uh-huh. How many years before you got up to Brooklyn?
Well, I started pro ball in 1930. Then I got an infected hand one here and come home. And then the next season, I started over here in a 3-I league in Decatur. Mm-hmm. In the month of the season, I had 4 wins and 1 loss, and the league blew up.
Oh, good job.
So Frank Dessau, who was a Decatur, he lived in York, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And he wrote me a letter and told me if I come out there, he thought maybe he could sell me to a AAA club or a major league club. Mm-hmm. So I said, well, I'm going to give baseball one more shot.
Mm-hmm.
So the next round went out to York, Pennsylvania, and I won 14 ball games. Middle of the year, I went up to Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And then I stayed there for till the middle of 36, and then went down to Atlanta, Georgia. And then in 38, I went back to the American League. I got operated for appendix down there. And
uh-huh.
I went back to the American League and stayed 9 years.
You sure did. Now, when did you develop the knuckleball?
Well, when I left home, I got hurt playing basketball, and for a year, the only year I high school had baseball team over here, and I couldn't make the team because I couldn't get my arm in high. Then when I went up past north side of Chicago to Evanston, Illinois, why, that's when I started pitching the batting practice, and I was one of these phenoms before. I could throw extra hard. I was like a fella or somebody. I could still throw hard when I went up there, but I didn't have that little extra that I had before, see? So I started to experiment with the knuckleball because I heard somebody talking about knuckleball. Well, I threw mine with the end of my fingers.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't feel comfortable trying to get my knuckles on, so I put the end of my fingers and got on.
Fair enough.
And of course, that's the way Hort Wilhelm did. He said he read about mine and followed it.
Did he really?
And we'd been on the air together and TV and stuff like that. And a lot of guys, outfielders, I taught more outfielders how to throw it. They could throw it on the sideline, but let them get on that hill.
Uh-huh.
It was a different story.
I'll bet.
But that's how I got started with a knuckleball. Mm-hmm. But the big thing was when I went to Atlanta from Brooklyn, Paul Richards was down there. Mm-hmm. And he caught me and he put his glove down like that. He said, "Now I want the ball down here, down here." And I got to the point with him that I felt like I could throw 8 out of 10 strikes, and I felt like I could throw it from the waist down.
Yeah, that's what kind
of. And I went right back to the American League, mm-hmm. and I stayed there for mm-hmm. 9 years.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful.
But okay, it was great. Paul Richards helped me a lot.
I guess he helped a lot of people.
Yeah, then he got Wilhelm later.
Yeah, he sure did.
And of course, we were about the same. The only thing. Wilhelm was, I was a starting pitcher for 15 years and a relief five. Well, he was, he started a few games, but he was mostly a relief pitcher all the way through.
When he started, he threw a no-hitter.
Yeah.
Now, you remember your first game with Brooklyn?
Well, I got into a ball game as a relief and like they were talking over the hitters before the ball game. And Casey Stengel was our manager, and he said, "If Frankie Frisch comes up and hits left-handed, we'll try to pitch him outside and high and make him hit the fly ball to left field." And the first thought when he come up there, that just flashed in my mind, and I threw the ball and got it high and outside, and he hit the fly ball to left field, and it turned out just right, and that was the first ball game that I.
Right.
Then my first start, I think I got beaten Pittsburgh 1-0.
Oh my!
And that was my first start after coming on the road.
Yeah. What was your first win? Do you remember?
I just don't remember that.
Yeah, that's all right. In that first year, the record here says you got into 10 games. Started 3, completed 2, won 2 and lost 3. ERA of 2.93.
Next year, I think, of 1.14.
1.14 the next year, that's right.
And then my dad died the following year, and I had a rough time, and I had to come home, and that was the year then they sent me to Atlanta.
Yeah. Now, we'll jump around.
Okay.
But can you put your finger on one or more of the best games you think you ever pitched anytime, anywhere?
Oh, I think one of the best games was deciding the American League pennant in 1944. I pitched the last game of the season in Detroit and pitched against Dizzy Trout, and the St. Louis Browns in Detroit were tied for the pennant.
I was listening.
I had one of the better ball games. I think they had one hit going into the ninth inning, and I win the ball game and knocked Detroit out of the pennant and gave it to the St. Louis Browns.
I talked to Luke Sewell last week, and he remembers, of course, all of that very vividly.
They had a big party next night.
Yeah.
They called me in Detroit and invited me and my wife down. We went down and had a great time, and Schlack Furniture Company down there used to broadcast the ball games, and they gave my wife 2 beautiful table lamps. Boy, they were pretty.
Oh, nice.
And that was really nice. So we enjoyed it very much.
You should have.
And, of course, I pitched the Lou Gehrig Day in New York.
Did you?
And I won that one.
Wonderful. Okay.
So I have about 3 of them.
Yeah.
And then I pitched the first night game they ever had in Yankee Stadium, and I won that one.
Remember what year that was?
Well, I don't know.
That
might have been 1939-40.
I'd say 39, very probably.
Yeah, because, and like I say, the Lou Gehrig Day was a big thrill for me.
Yeah.
But it was the saddest thing between games that I ever...
Yeah.
We had about 60-some thousand people. And I don't think there was a person there that didn't have a tear in their eye. You could have heard a quarter drop on top of you.
And
it was because there was a big, strong fella, and he just waddled out and didn't want any help from anybody. And Babe Ruth was there. And when he got the mic, took his mic, he says he was the luckiest. He says, "I'm the luckiest guy in the world." And he said they got a wonderful wife and a wonderful mother and everything, and then out too long. And,
Oh, yeah, wasn't long at all.
It was a sad thing, you know, but I was so happy winning that first ball game.
Sure, it was a thrill in any case.
Yeah.
I guess 1939 was pretty much your best year on wins and losses. You were 20-8.
Yeah, I was 20-8. I think we only won 61 ball games, the whole ball game.
Yeah. And then in 45 with Washington, you were 17-7.
Yeah, and I think I lost 11 ball games by one run that year.
Yeah, you'd won a couple of them, you'd have won.
And I don't think there was over 3 runs and scored in any of them. And if I could just got half of them, I'd have gone over the 320 win mark again.
Yeah.
But that's the way the ball bounces, see.
2.13 ERA that year. That's terrific. And that was better by far than you had in your 20 game season. Your 354.
Yeah.
So
we didn't have very strong ball clubs at Washington.
No, but I noticed that in 44, the year you knocked Detroit out of the pennant, you finished 8th, Washington.
Yeah.
But the very next year, of course, the personnel all over the league changed a lot with the war. But the very next year, you were one game from winning the pennant, according to this.
Two games out. Detroit.
We finished
the season a week ahead of Detroit, and we had to go up there and
wait.
And that was the only time we ever come close, see, because Griffin had rented the stadium out for the football team. So that was.
Thing shows a one game difference at the end.
Maybe it was. I don't know. It's been a long time.
They may have clinched it with 2 days to go.
Yeah.
They were 88-65 under Steve O'Neill, and you were 87-67. Well, that's a game and a half.
Bucky Harris. Right?
Yeah. No, Ossie Bluesy.
He was a nice guy.
Now, that was the year, or was it? No, 45 wasn't. One year, Washington had 4 knuckleballers, you and Nigling and Hefner, and was Roger Wolf knuckleballer?
Roger Wolf, that's right.
Well, he wasn't with you this year, so that must have been 44. Let's see what I get on 44. I think Roger was there another year or two.
Well, that's the year I'd come up with a sore arm and Griffin. He blamed me for losing the pennant that year. Said I should have won a few more.
In 44?
When I had won, I think that 17 ball games.
No, that was 45 was when you won the 17.
Well, was that when we were 2 games out?
Yeah, a game and a half out.
Yeah, and 45.
Yeah.
He blamed me for losing the pennant that year.
You got a lot of
I'd gotten up sore arm. And tell you the truth, I better not say this on the air.
Well, it's up to you.
I'll tell you later.
All right. In 44, you were 14-14, Mickey Hefner was 12-15, Nigling was 10-8, and Wolf was 4-15. But I think Wolf came back with a good year.
Yeah, he came back with a good year the next
year. Yeah. Wolf was 20-10 the very next year, actually 4-15. That's amazing the way people can turn around like that.
Yeah. Well, the thing was, on that 17, Griffin wanted to cut me $500.
Oh, yeah.
Even the bottom dropped out. I let myself go and got out of shape. That's when I come back in the National League.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to prove that I could get back
still
in shape and go. I won 17 ball games for Philadelphia.
Sure did. First year we were with him. The Griffiths kind of noted for that.
He was. The old man was.
Well,
and
the
even the young guy still up there, he's having problems.
You're talking right.
Yeah.
What would you say then was your biggest thrill in baseball?
Well, like I say, I got a few of them. Well, one of them. I got a few. I might as well tell you all. When I went to the American League, I didn't have any money. My wife and I together, and we didn't have any kids then.
Mm-hmm.
And in those days, if you paid for an apartment, $250 for an apartment for the month, if they sent you the minors in a week, you were out. You didn't get that money back like they do now. See?
Yeah, yeah.
So we stayed at a boarding house because some other ball players had stayed there before me, you know, and I with her.
Yeah.
So we stayed there until we found out what. Well, then I went out to the ballpark and I had the pitch that night, and it was against Bob Feller, that thing up there.
Yeah.
I beat him 1-0 in 13 innings and didn't walk a man. He gave up 6 hits. And that was the biggest thrill. And then the big thrill was after the ball game, they called me in the office and said, get yourself an apartment, you're going to be with the ball.
Oh.
And then I stayed 9 years.
Yeah.
See? And then, like I say, pitching the Lou Gehrig day and that last day in Detroit were great thrills for
naturally.
Me.
Naturally.
And those three are really great, you know.
What was your biggest disappointment through the years?
Oh, I guess maybe when I found out that finally, Mr. Griffin and I argued back and forth, but finally he said, well, you'll have to pay your own expenses of spring training that year, see, 17, when he wanted to cut me $500. So then we got together and he said, well, the reason everybody was taking a cut was because we had some fellas coming back from the service, like Cecil Travis and Buddy Lewis, and wanted to give them some money. I said, well, if that's the way it is, I'll try to do my part and I'll play for what I got last year. Well, that's what he wanted in the first place. So I was real happy. The first month of the season, I had 4 wins and 1 loss.
Yeah.
And going along, I pick up the morning paper and across the headline it says, everybody got on a club, got a raise but one. And I knew in my heart that was me.
It was, yeah.
And the bottom dropped out.
Gotcha.
And to make a long story short, I wound up the season winning 10 and losing 10.
That's right.
And Ozzie Bluegee was manager, and finally, 2 weeks before the season was over, I asked Ozzie, I said, Ozzie, does the old man figure on me and his plans for next year?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, no, frankly, he doesn't. So I told Ozzie what happened. He says, why in the heck didn't you tell me this?
Long time.
2 months ago.
Yeah.
I said, every time I wanted to talk to you, you were going to office see Griffin. I never got a chance. I went out and worked out and everything.
Yeah.
And Ozzie said, well, we're not going to give you away. And I said, I can still pitch up here. I can help you if you give me a chance. Well, Joe Cambier was a scout for us, Cuban scout. He didn't think I could get back in shape. I let myself go. See, I went up to 225 pounds. And I really wasn't in shape.
Yeah.
And so he didn't think I could get back in shape, so they sold me to Philadelphia. Well, as soon as the deal was made, I told my wife, I said, I'm going to show that gray-haired old guy that I can still pitch up here. And I went on a diet, Walter, then. I started working out here in Auburn, running and running and running. I went to spring training. I never had a glass of beer or a highball or a Coke. All I drank was water and black coffee.
Yeah.
And work, I had to sweat suit, and I took off that 25 pounds. Of course, I looked drab, you know.
You do, yeah.
But I ate broiled fish till it came out of my ears, and no desserts. I ate grapefruit and stuff like that. And I kept my strength.
Yeah.
And I came back and won 17 ball games for Philadelphia, and I think I was right up there in the earned run average.
Yeah, 268.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the next year for Philadelphia, I lost 17.
But you had 251
earned average. I didn't. Yeah. We didn't have two. I think that was sixth place ball club.
Yeah, 47 and 48.
So that was disappointing.
That's
over there.
You had in 48. You finished sixth, all right, and Ben Chapman, Dusty.
That's right.
Ben Chapman, Dusty Cook, and Eddie Sawyer all managed.
Yeah, yeah.
And the year before, Ben Chapman was the manager.
Yeah.
You were seventh place that season.
Yeah.
And You and
School Boy Row and I, we picked double headers.
And that we came over there.
We kept winning double headers.
You were the only ones with winning records. He was 14-10. And you didn't have too much else.
But that was before I went to Philadelphia. I was happy when I got to Philadelphia, don't get me wrong, but
yeah.
I didn't think I got a good deal at Washington. I didn't think I got
you sure didn't.
And, chance.
There have been others with the same problem.
Because on that Detroit ball game, somebody called me up and offered me a lot of money not to have a good day, and I told the coach, Clyde Milan.
Yeah.
He went to Ozzie Bluesy and told him what happened, because George Case and I talked it over. He said, that's if somebody happened to hear that phone call.
That's right.
Maybe you could be thrown out of baseball for life.
So, was old Judge Landis still alive at that time?
I think he was. Yeah. And so he went and told Ozzie. Ozzie gave him a new ball. I came back and he said, you're still a pitcher. And I was like that until I started warming up.
Mm-hmm.
Then I used to tell my wife, I said, now, if you want me to acknowledge you, get out there before I start warming up. Because from then on, I don't see anybody or hear anybody.
That's a good way.
And yeah. I couldn't tell you whether we had 10,000 or 30,000. I never hear the people. You know?
So I hear every sound that's made in the.
A lot of guys got run right out. Yeah, right.
Yep.
A lot of them got run right out of the baseball. They couldn't take it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the fans, you don't fool them too often. I think they sense and know if you're bearing down and give everything you got, even though it may not be enough that day. If you're giving everything you got, they don't. Yeah, they'll stay with you.
They're
pretty darn good.
Yeah. Now in Brooklyn, when you went over there, who was your manager?
Well,
Casey
Stengel. Yeah, but just before him, for that one little bit I was there, Max Carey.
Oh yeah.
Oh, Max. Casey. He was quite a guy.
Oh. He's one of a kind.
Yeah.
I guess he talked in his own stingy style in those days. You know?
Yeah, he did.
Then you, 37, weren't you still there? No.
In 1937? I was at Atlanta.
That's right.
I went back to the American League in 38.
Mm-hmm. Burley Rhines became the manager that you were calling,
yeah.
All right, now in 38, you came over and...
In Washington.
And who was the manager? Bucky Harris.
Bucky Harris, thought he
was still pretty young.
I thought he was a great manager.
Yeah, he must have been.
And he didn't have... He wasn't loud or anything, and he was smart. And if you kept making a couple of mistakes, I mean bonehead plays, he didn't raise his voice or anything. He'd just have to say two or three words, and you felt like crawling under the table. But the next day, that was all over.
That was past. Yeah.
He left me in a ball game one time. Our pitching staff was pretty well wrecked, and they got three runs up, unearned runs off me the first inning. The next inning they got another one unearned, and he come out and he said, Dutch, if you can